Voices and Views is brought to you in part by Advanced Litho Printing, with over 60 years of excellence in printing. From the smallest job to the largest jobs and anything in between, Advanced Litho has everything you need printing related. Advanced Litho is family owned and Great Falls based. To find out more about all they offer, go to advancedlithoprinting.com or call them at 406-453-0393. And we thank them for supporting local public radio on KGPR. Welcome to Voices and Views on Great Falls Radio, KGPR 89.9. I'm your host, Thomas Risberg, and today on the show, I have the pleasure of welcoming back Gary Owen, the president of United Way of Cascade County, along with Kim Skornogoski, the marketing director. Thank you all so much for coming on to the show.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas.
Absolutely. So I want to jump right in. Give me an overview of the role of United Way in bringing together very disparate elements of our community.
So depending on the particular issue, we've developed some initiatives that we invite some of the natural stakeholders to come together to try to foster a more collaborative working community around those issues. But we find that, or we have found that the natural stakeholders, that it's a bit of an incomplete group to look at some of these very significant issues. So we've tried to expand that. We now have city county government officials involved, business leaders, for-profit business, which, you know, oftentimes we tend to overlook that, but most of these issues are so impactful that they need to be a part of the conversation. They need to be a part of the solution. And I like to think that United Way is a great convener of all of those interests in bringing them together to tackle some really broad and significant issues in the community.
Yeah, I think what's important for the community to know is that when we're talking about really big problems, our community's biggest problems, a lot of the people that are in the trenches working on these issues are just focused on the day-to-day. And that, you know, because they're working hard, they're trying to help the family that's sitting in front of them. And so it takes an entity like United Way to say, you all are working so hard, you're doing great work, but we're not seeing the needle move because you're just working, you know, maybe you're working in a silo, or maybe you're not taking the time to step back and look at big picture. And so, you know, for these big problems, United Way has several initiatives that are doing just that, where we're playing the role of bringing people together and saying, let's look at the data of a problem. Let's look at, you know, what are kind of smart solutions, what are current resources, and how do we all work together to make progress, to actually move that needle.
The role is this collective impact, where what you need and that United Way fulfills, right, is that backbone organization that isn't having to every single day have that person come in and it totally throws, you know, the organization off track, and you're able to sit back and have that time and then get the people to come to the table. I think that's a really important role that you all are able to fill. So can you tell me briefly, just give me an overview of the current initiatives that you have going on?
So we have initiatives in each of our focus areas. So we have an education initiative that people in the community may know of as Graduation Matters. So that is obviously bringing together stakeholders in the education world and really looking at what we need to do as a community, not just as a school district, but as a community to help students succeed. And then the other area, another area that we focus on is health. And so we have an initiative called Healthy Lives, Vibrant Futures that's working on bringing the community stakeholders in the health arena, you know, whether it's looking at substance abuse or obesity, access to health care, prevention of child abuse and neglect. You know, all of those issues are huge, huge issues. No one nonprofit, no one government agency is going to solve any of those issues. And then the kind of the final area that United Way focuses on is financial stability. And, you know, really one of our leading initiatives right now is just looking at basic needs, looking at homelessness in our community and how can we impact a problem like that that has so many different kind of tentacles and causes. But how do we really address root issues and how do we, in fact, help families move into permanent homes?
Absolutely. And before we dive into the initiatives, I do think you guys do a great job. What I call it is somewhat of an auditing role, and that you're able to, through the grants, you know, figure out what are all these groups doing and who's getting a good ROI for the community. And one thing that I really want our listeners to understand that you guys do a great job of breaking apart is the difference between outputs and outcomes, because I think that's really essential, that you can be having a ton of output and not actually moving the needle. And so can you just describe a little bit the differences between those two?
Kim looks at me because she knows I love that language. but yeah, you know, so outputs, and you have to have a combination of looking at outputs and outcomes. You know, our volunteers, they understand that certain services or programs are going to be more time intensive. And if you say, okay, we're going to give $10,000 to a program that's going to reach five kids, that's a pretty significant cost per participant. But depending on the type of program it is, that might be acceptable. There might be another program that you give $10,000 to that reaches 1,000 people. So anyway, you look at the outputs, you look at the numbers, you know, how many people are they reaching? What type of service are they providing? But the outcome is truly what you're shooting for. Are we making a difference in the lives of those five youth? Or are we making a difference in the lives of those 1,000 people in the other example? And so you have to know that you're getting that return on your investment. You know, that's one thing we tell the community. We're accountable to our donors. We hold our partners accountable, but we do it in a way, I like your term, like an auditor. We try to do it in a way where our service providers, the organizations that we provide grants to, they don't look at us as, you know, the person with their thumb on their neck, making sure they're doing what they say they're going to do. We're a partner. You know, we're working with them because their goals align with our goals, or we wouldn't be funding them in the first place. And we monitor that progress. It helps the program know that they're being effective. It helps us communicate to the community and to our donors that their dollars are having a positive impact. And that's what outcomes are. They are that impact that a program has on the individuals they work with. So, you know, how many, the output versus what is the difference, the outcome. It's a huge difference and critical in knowing if a program is being effective.
Yeah, I think a good example of the difference between outcomes and outputs, an output would be you gave a book to every student in Great Falls Public Schools. And an outcome would be those students are better readers. So it's, you know, we, of course, hopefully, if you give students more books, particularly books that they like to read, they will become better readers. But you really need to measure both in order to create community change.
Absolutely. And I think you can get, you know, obsessed about, okay, how many meals did I provide? How many did I do this? And it does, it makes good for a glossy, you know, brochure and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I love the one I'm very familiar with is the Graduation Matters, right? I mean, that you talk about a big community level, you know, outcome is graduation rates.
Yeah.
Right. Are we seeing that the graduation rate in Great Falls Public Schools is increasing? That to me is a great marker of, with all of we're doing here, at the end of the day, are more of our kids, you know, getting to the skills that they need to go out and succeed in the world. I love that. I don't think that it happens enough then that you're a catalyst for bringing that more and more to nonprofits. And yeah, we see it nationally. And I guess I kind of want to salute you for that. Because it's not always easy to have those conversations when you've been doing something for 30 years and this is the way you've been doing it. But I do want to hone in again on your role as a mediator of, and kind of an information spreader is the way I think about it. So talk to me about, I want to start with Healthy Lives, Vibrant Futures. Give me a flavor of, you know, who's at the table discussing, you know, how we can reduce obesity.
So the entity or kind of the collaborative group that's leading that aspect of our health work is Get Fit Great Falls. And so literally there's 20 some stakeholders at the table, and it's everybody from benefits to parks and rec to the state parks to
Forest Service.
Yeah, Forest Service, you know, Alliance for Youth. So it's literally Great Falls Public Schools. I mean, I could go on, the Peak Health and Wellness. So it's just, if you just think about all the entities, you know, that really can play a role in, you know, in our physical health, you know, hopefully in, you know, kind of improving nutrition, but also increasing access to activities. It's just a vast array of, you know, what we kind of call stakeholders, people that have the ability to impact an issue. So you bring together all of those people in a room. And I think what's really great about our health work is you have a group of stakeholders like Get Fit Great Falls. And at a bigger level, they're at the table with the same folks that are looking at improving access to mental health care. And they're at the same table, and those people are at the same, you know, are also at the table with the folks that are looking at substance abuse and preventing child abuse and neglect. And what we find is, you know, with these big, huge issues that impacting one area impacts the other areas. So, you know, being physically healthy, actually, you know, going out and exercising improves your mental health. Improving your mental health reduces your reliance on substances. Reducing substance use impacts child abuse. So it's, you know, all of these kind of really disparate health goals are all tied together, and we all see that, which is wonderful about that initiative, that we all see that your success impacts my success and our overall community's health.
And even beyond the health, I mean, they all impact, you know, Kim mentioned our three initiatives of education, health, and financial stability. What you see is that every single one of them has a significant impact on the other. You know, healthy kids will show up to school, are more likely to succeed. Families that are financially stable, same thing. They're working, they're self-sustaining, they're sending their kids to school. You know, it's all, we used to say it was a three-legged stool, and now we're looking at, you know, what is that seat on the top of those three legs where they all come together? Because we do see them tying in very, very closely.
Absolutely. And I think that gets at the core of what makes United Way unique, is that you're able to sit at the confluence of all those and kind of point out to folks who are, you know, doing incredible work, but in that silo, and you're able to say, hey, you've got some great synergies with what's going on with these folks that you're probably not on your radar on a day-to-day basis, but they actually offer this, and your folks that you work with, if they could be more financially secure, that's going to allow their physical health that you're dealing with to really improve, and vice versa. So I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics of it, and I think this will be helpful to our listeners. So when you are going to jump into an initiative, right, what is the background work that goes into kind of laying the groundwork for that?
Well, I mean, I could go a long ways back when we first started considering moving to a community impact model. The work that went into that was a lot of one-on-one conversations, a lot of small group conversations in the community about, you know, what do we want to achieve? You know, what are those outcomes that our community values? And those three areas, you know, we want our youth to succeed. Our education initiative uses educational outcomes to measure progress, but our ultimate outcome for our education initiative is that our youth succeed. You know, how do we know they're going to succeed? Biggest factor, do they get a high school diploma? You know, all kinds of data and statistics on, you know, where you're going to end up with or without a high school diploma. So we try to talk to the community. We talk to the natural leaders, the experts in the field. Like Kim mentioned, you break down any one initiative and then into the kind of sub-goals of those initiatives. They're huge. And we don't pretend to be the experts on any of these initiatives, but we know who are the experts, and we can help bring them to the table. As both you and Kim alluded to, people who are in the trenches and working with clientele that need this particular type of help, they get so driven and so focused in their work sometimes, you know, you need to pull your head up and go, oh, if I were working with them or I understood what they were doing and how we could work better together, it would make my job easier and it would make me more effective. And we see that so often, but it's hard to pull people away when they're, you know, they're working hard and good causes. Say, hey, you know, take an hour out of your day and let's get together and figure out how we can do better.
You also interact directly with the public, right? When you right. find out, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you gather information from the community writ large to understand what they view as the needs of the community?
Yeah, so when we first started kind of down this path of community impact, you know, we held focus groups anywhere, everywhere, really just trying to figure out what the most important issues are of the community. And I think what's important is as our work has continued, we continue to ask the community what they care about. You know, every 3 years, we do surveys of the public to find out what their most, what their biggest priorities are in the area of health. Right now, we are doing focus groups with teenagers to find out what are some of the barriers to graduating. We're about to embark on some more kind of community outreach to people that both to kids, really young kids, and kindergarten teachers and daycare providers and parents to find out, you know, what are the needs for childcare in our community and what is, you know, what does it mean to be ready for kindergarten? So it's just constant because really if you want to have a community initiative, the community needs to be behind you. They need to be a part of the solution. And part of being the solution is telling us what you care about. And part of being a part of the solution is to be aware that these problems exist and then to kind of the role that United Way plays is also saying, you care about this, here's how you can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that's the matchmaker role that, yeah. you know, they seem so big and you don't even know where your entry right. point is if you're a, you know, community right. member that really wants to help. But so, and I talk about, you know, what you guys have online in terms of it's really impressive to match people that have, you know, the desire to volunteer, but don't necessarily know where to start.
Sure. Yeah. So we launched Volunteer Great Falls, which is a web-based site that both nonprofits who have volunteer needs and individuals who want to volunteer, or teams or businesses that want to pull together and volunteer together. There's, I don't know, 60-some different nonprofits represented on volunteergreatfalls.org. And, you know, that's an interesting, just the beginning of that. We've been involved, obviously, with volunteerism. And then the Chamber, through their Leadership Great Falls program, 1 year, the Leadership Great Falls group wanted to do 1,000 hours of volunteerism. And that was their project, was that their members, well, as they started looking at it, they thought, it shouldn't be this hard to find volunteer opportunities. So they came to us, and we worked with the Chamber and with Leadership Great Falls and developed volunteergreatfalls.org, and we've been administering that and, you know, trying to keep current needs and matching it up with people who are interested in volunteering.
Yeah, I love it. So in the social services sector, they talk about no wrong door, right? Is that you can get access to any service you want, regardless of where you come into the system. And it's kind of the same, you know, anything you're interested in, you come to this one entry point, and we can get you connected to any organization that fits with what you're looking to do, which I love. It's making volunteerism the easy choice, right? Mm-hmm. Recognizing that people are extraordinarily busy.
Yeah.
So I want to jump in now. I want to go over each of the initiatives, at least at a kind of 10,000 foot level. And so I want to start, we discussed a little bit of Healthy Lives, Vibrant Futures, but graduation matters. So what have you guys been doing, especially with COVID, going on related to that initiative?
So there's been a lot of work going into the direction of our education initiative and graduation matters. We had to honestly take a little bit of a step back during the pandemic. Obviously, the school district was very cautious in, you know, who's coming in and out of the schools. A lot of the work that we were doing, we couldn't get volunteers into the schools. We couldn't bring people together because of COVID. So we're really at a point right now, and Kim mentioned some of the focus groups of where are we going? You know, obviously those graduation rates, attendance rates, third grade reading scores, we're still looking at those. We know that this past year, those numbers aren't looking good. I mean, it was a significant impact on educational outcomes in our community, what our kids have gone through. So we're trying to make sure that as we get moving again, that we're doing it in a smart way. And so we're bringing a lot of those stakeholders back to just some of the initial conversations of how do we move this needle? You know, the kindergarten readiness that Kim mentioned, we haven't moved that needle since Graduation Matters started. It's been one of our metrics for 10 years, and it has not improved. So the conversation is not that important. We know it's important. We know that's one of the most critical factors, early childhood education. The conversation is, what do we need to be doing different, because the things we have been doing aren't showing results. And so going back to evaluating effort and seeing improvement, well, if you're not seeing improvement, that tells you something as well. And you have to own that data. You know, we're not proud of that. We're proud of the graduation rates increasing. We're proud of dropout numbers decreasing. But we also know that if the data is telling us we're not making improvement, that's when we really have to work extra hard to figure out, okay, what else should we be doing? How can we address it? Look at some best practices from around the country. You know, we have some constraints. We're one of the few states in the country that we don't provide universal child care and preschool.
Or have state support.
Have state support for that, right.
Of pre-K.
Yeah,
or
not that it would be universal, but that the state supports it. We don't have that. You know, that's our reality. We're not going to whine about that. We're going to say, what else can we do to make a difference in this?
Absolutely. And I do love that you can carry, you know, both those, is that, hey, sometimes it's a matter of resources, right? And we can then come together and point that out. But before we, you know, go and ask for, hey, we need these resources, let's figure out, you know, what worked and what didn't work with where we were putting our resources, right? Is I love that focus on efficiency, right? That it's not just dollars, it's dollars and where they are being spent. Mm-hmm. But I do want to make sure the community knows the real success, and I know that COVID is probably, you know, we don't know the effects of that, but on graduation matters, on those top line rates, I just want to, you know, give you guys a chance to let the community know, because it really was, and it is a bright spot, right, of how far those moved.
Yeah. When you talk about a huge community level indicator, you know, certainly looking at graduation rates, I mean, you know, they're really, you know, that is kind of the ultimate indicator in the education world. And with the Graduation Matters initiative, you know, what we found before we started, pretty much year after year after year, somewhere between 210 and 215 kids were dropping out every single year. And when you say that number, it's, you know, I honestly, I get a pit in my stomach just thinking about it. Well, the folks at the school district felt the exact same way. And that's why, you know, really they opened themselves up to revealing that problem, revealing that this is an issue in our community. And in, you know, kind of partnering with United Way, we said that is a community problem. That isn't a school district problem. That's a community problem. And that we all need to work together to make an impact on that number. And by doing that, by bringing attention to it, by the district, school district bringing, you know, their focus to it. Now that number is somewhere around 110 every year. So we've cut the number of dropouts in half, which is, I mean, honestly stunning. When we started it, we said that was our goal, but we thought it was an aspirational goal. And then we hit it. And so what's great about our school district, this initiative, and our partnership is we said, okay, we've met that goal. Let's make the goal even higher. And let's look at having our on-time graduation rate. Let's have it be 90%, which would make us, you know, among the best in the country. So, you know, we're still working at that. You know, we've found, and I honestly, looking at COVID and looking at the impact that it has right now on high schoolers and where they should be, you know, where a freshman should have so many credits, a sophomore should have so many credits, junior, senior, and frankly, the numbers of students who are behind are probably twice as high as they were before COVID. That's somewhat to be expected because of this, because, you know, some students, certainly many students missed 3 months of school. Other students missed a year and 3 months of school. So, you know, we're behind, but we're looking at creative ways to catch back up and help those kids graduate on time.
Absolutely. It's always good to set a stretch goal and meet it and then, you know, stretch a little more. But and certainly the pandemic has, you know, had a profound effects on the, you know, socio-emotional health of our youth and all of us.
Yeah.
But I do want to give you guys a chance of this. Something I really like about United Way is you're nimble. So when COVID struck, you know, tell us about the organizing role you guys played in just getting resources to folks that needed it.
Yeah, that was a big shift for us. And you talk about, you know, where our initiatives are and, you know, being responsive to the needs of the community, being responsive to our donors. When things shut down for the pandemic, it included a lot of nonprofits that they didn't know how they were going to continue delivering services in something that was unprecedented in our lifetimes. So we tried to be, you know, a gatherer of information. We reached out to all of our service partners, but additional nonprofits around the community. We had one site where you could go and look at, they had a specific form they filled out and how COVID has impacted their hours, you know, if they were even open, how people could contact them. So we we worked for those first probably 6 months of the pandemic at just being like a resource, informational resource of, you know, people seeing what the impact was on human service organizations, you know, revised information on hours and accessibility, that kind of thing. And I think it really, it strengthened some of the relationships among nonprofits in the community. We had an outside the community foundation that they're looking to help communities where they have an interest. They found our site. And so they contacted us and said, we want to help. What can we do? And so we came up with an opportunity for them. They provided $100,000 in direct aid funding for families who'd been impacted by COVID and the shutdown. They ended up coming back again and providing another $125,000. So $225,000 direct aid to families, kind of as a result of that work of just trying to let the community know what's going on. And then here's someone even outside our community who accessed that and goes, this is good. You know, here's somebody who's paying attention to what the nonprofits are doing and what the needs are, and has stepped up with some critical resources.
Right. Which we leverage to get more money to help families that needed it too.
Yeah, it's again that connector between the needs in the community and those that have the resources and the desire to help. That's really key. So I want to jump over to the financial stability. And, you know, it's at a very interesting period, I think, we're at in the United States, where there's some metrics that are really great, right? I mean, savings, people are making more money, the economy is doing, you know, really well coming out of COVID. But we're not seeing that in all elements of our society. And I typically talk about the bottom quintile. But what are your initiatives around financial stability?
So our overarching initiative is called Prosperity Matters, and it looks at a number of home ownership, number of people living in poverty, basic necessities, food, security, obviously shelter, housing. And we've been involved with kind of a piece of that is the local homelessness initiative. I chair the local continuum of care, which, you know, is kind of a weird name for that organization, but it's really about making homelessness rare, brief, and non-recurring. So those are the goals of that work. And we have 30-some organizations who are a part of the continuum of care, and, you know, some of the natural stakeholders who you think of working with the people who either are homeless or at risk of homelessness. But we have, you know, the faith-based community involved. We have government, law enforcement, you know, a pretty good scope of people and organizations that we've really seen progress in strengthening that work in Great Falls.
And so I do think people are not familiar with this term that are, you know, in the broader public, but explain what is meant just by the continuum of care. What does that consist of?
So what it's trying to relay there through the name is that we know most of the individuals experiencing homelessness, they need more than just a structure to live in. They need services depending on their individual circumstance. For them to be successful, we need to have that whole continuum of care available to them. And part of the work of that group is looking, we have case managers who meet every other week, twice a month, and they're actually addressing individuals by name who are homeless, and they're looking at their specific needs, their specific barriers to housing, and making sure that, you know, when we do find permanent housing for them, they have the services available to help them be successful so that, you know, the next month they're not right back out on the street. So that continuum of care is looking at the entire individual and how do we help that person get permanent housing and be successful in maintaining that housing?
And I think something that I know you guys have been intricately involved in that I think people would be glad to hear that this is happening is the Connect referral system. And just describe that a little bit and why that's so helpful, because it allows you not just to, you know, follow people across various services, but also longitudinally, right? That you have somebody that is in Billings for a while, and then 2 years later they're in Great Falls, and we don't lose all that accumulated knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, so locally, the City County Health Department, they're the kind of lead agency on the Connect referral system. But it's exactly as you describe. It's something that, you know, if I'm interacting with a client, you know, at my fingertips, I've got their, hopefully, entire history of service, you know, right there in front of me in real time. You know, another system that's in place, the Homeless Management Information System, is a whole different database for homeless individuals or those experiencing homelessness. And locally, Opportunities Incorporated is the lead agency on our HMIS system. And again, it's just so critical for those case managers when someone is in the system that they can pull up real time what are the circumstances around this individual's reason for being homeless? And what kind of services have they accessed? What do they need? Do we identify, you know, those gaps? So that's critical. It is also critical when we look at, you know, the big money is the federal funding. For us to get federal funding, we have to have that real data. We have to be efficient in how we get it. We have to be able to demonstrate that we're doing a good job locally, that our scoring in some of those federal grants relies on that. And if we're not effective in that, it's going to hurt the available resources.
And it's very interesting, actually, how that data is gathered. Can you talk a little bit about, I know the survey where they're literally going out in town, right, and counting.
Right. So they're once a year, that's what's called a point-in-time survey. So Housing and Urban Development pushes that through local continuums of care. And usually the last Thursday of January, we attempt to count every person experiencing homelessness in our community. And that goes on across the country on one day every year. Obviously, this past year, there were some tweaks to it because of the concern with safety of volunteers going out. But we should be back. We hope it'll be back to a normal count. We count them whether they're in the shelter or under the bridges or in the camp somewhere. And a lot of the service providers that work with these individuals on a daily basis, they know where to find them. So, you know, that effort, you know, Great Falls has somewhere in the neighborhood of 250 to 300 homeless individuals based on the point in time survey. And some of that is, you know, it fluctuates from year to year, but on average, that's where we end up.
And I do want to delve now more deeply into the homelessness issue. And I do want to start out by defining homeless, because if you look at, for instance, the federal government, what they will define that as, can be far more restrictive than I think is a useful definition for people where housing insecurity is really majorly affecting their lives. So can you give a little background on what it means to be homeless?
Yeah, and even within the federal government, there are varying definitions of homelessness. As you well know, the McKinney-Vento Act for youth homelessness is very different. If a student or someone under the age of 18 is sleeping at a friend's house on the couch, McKinney-Vento would consider them homeless. Housing and Urban Development would not. Housing and Urban Development looks at someone in the short term, where you stayed last night, was it meant for human habitation? You know, in the back of your car is not obviously in a sleeping bag under the bridge is not. And then they have further definitions, chronically homeless, depending on how long and how frequently over the last year you've experienced homelessness. So there's a lot of variations in the definitions of homelessness. You know, a family that is staying in a hotel, that's meant for human habitation. But if I don't have a permanent home, you know, that I consider that family homeless. You know, if they're, you know, having to live in a hotel and probably asking for assistance to pay for it, you know, thankfully they're in somewhere that's safe, but that's not a permanent housing solution.
Absolutely. And it goes to that uncertainty, right? For any human being is very difficult to thrive with. And they talk about study after study shows that if you're not having these, you know, basic kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs stuff met, you're not going to be able to get an education to, you know, move up in the workforce. And so it is foundational, right? That we address this. And so I want to kind of head on. We've had some, it's been a hot button issue for us in Great Falls recently around homelessness. And I know you've been in conversations with a lot of community leaders. Can you kind of let our listeners know what the major issues have been and where, you know, you think you can find some common ground?
Sure. Well, I think a lot of the conversations recently, I would not even want to term them as homelessness issues. I think they're more public safety issues, and the individuals who are creating concerns are not necessarily homeless. You know, we just had a meeting today. Law enforcement was represented. Two of the individuals who, you know, were recognizable downtown, the police officer mentioned their solution. These two were engaged in a fight, and the solution was taking one of them home. He has a home, has a house. You know, his idea of what he wants to do during the day is to go out and hang around with maybe some individuals downtown who some of them may not have a home. But anyway, so they're not necessarily homeless, but they're individuals who I think intimidate other people, and especially when you see large groups of them. But, you know, people experiencing homelessness, that's not a crime. They're people we need to help. They're not people we need to be scared of. They're people we need to be scared for. And I think our community is missing some of that definition.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that dovetails a lot with some misconceptions about folks that struggle with mental illness, that they are often seen as someone who is a threat of violence, whereas the truth is they are far more likely to be taken advantage of and have something violent done to them by someone who is not mentally ill. And I think there's that same mentality that we kind of confuse, you know, where the threats are and what's going on the ground, right? And you just kind of see it all as one undifferentiated mass. But I do want to address, and this may just be anecdotal, but, you know, the homelessness is intricately intertwined with mental illness, and that, you know, have we been able to get out and kind of get a picture of what the homeless folks in our community, what their needs are?
Yeah, and I think we're doing a better job of that. I think when we talked about the point in time survey, that mostly gathers demographic information, you know, age, ethnicity, male, female, with a family. Our homeless management information system delves more into what are their needs. You know, are they experiencing mental illness? Do they have a substance abuse issue? Do they have the potential to hold a job? So that process of assessing the person who goes into the homeless management information system then creates a picture of how do we help them. We know who they are. We know what their issues are. And then, but, you know, people experiencing homelessness are as varied as, you know, the rest of the population. It's a family with children. It's, you know,
a veteran.
Yeah, yeah. And so lumping them together is tough. And you can't say, you know, what's this cause or that cause, but certainly mental health issues and substance abuse issues are significant.
And nationally, you know, looking at national statistics, somewhere around a third of homeless individuals are have mental illness issues.
And I do want to, this is on a national number, but to show a bright spot to our listeners that when people do get together on collective action, and this is national numbers, but, you know, veteran homelessness, I don't know if people are aware, has been cut in half, right, from the peaks that you saw 5-10 years ago. And so I do think that that became an issue, and there, right, you garnered support that these are not, they're intractable, but they are not impossible to really move the dial on. And so I want to get into solutions. If you guys are kind of at that point with as the conversations go, I know a lot of it's information finding, but, you know, what are some emerging, at least, ideas that we could do as a community to kind of, you know, turn the dial on this?
Sure. So I think bringing resources to town. NeighborWorks Great Falls just received a low-income tax credit that's going to help them revitalize the Batts Building on 2nd Avenue South. Part of that project will be creating services on site. There will be facilities there on the main floor to house counseling services, substance abuse services. So right there on site, those individuals who will receive the permanent housing and have the services available, that's a recipe for success. We know that once they're identified and make sure that they're set up properly for success, to have those services available is going to be key. That's going to be a great resource, but it's going to, you know, be one of, you know, we need 10 more like that. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the work that Gary is doing is, and the continuum of care is doing, is looking at existing resources in our community and how can we connect those resources to people who don't even know they exist. You know, so it's getting the name of that homeless individual or that family, finding out what their needs are, what you know, what resources they've had in the past and what resources are available to them. And to get all the people in the room that can help that person and saying, oh, I've got this. I can, you know, they can come to me and get that help. And having those people know each other, so you have warm handoffs, so you're not just saying, family, go to this building and hope that someone there can help you. It's family. Let me introduce you to Janice, and Janice can connect you to, you know, support for your, to help you pay your electrical bill now that you've gotten your low income housing. You know, so it's just putting all the pieces of this puzzle together is just critical.
Absolutely. And I do think, I can't emphasize that enough, the importance of connecting. In that, you know, I tell folks, you look at, these are nationally, right, that 40% of our produce is thrown out, right? Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, we have tens of millions of families that are hungry. Well, how do you square those? And it's logistics. You can't get it right from where there is the supply to those that, you know, have the need. And so I love that focus on connecting, because the other thing you'll see is duplication, right? You realize that you've got four different people operating, giving essentially the same service. And, well, why don't we combine those efforts, right? As you can find great ways to collaborate, to do something that works for the community, right? That, sure, and the people that we're serving. And so I want to talk about now, we're kind of getting towards the end of the hour, and resources are needed, right, for United Way to be able to do this hard work of connecting, you know, various entities and people and these broad community organizations. So right now you guys have your campaign going on, And tell me a little bit about that and what it consists of, and how folks can get involved and support the efforts.
Sure. So we pride ourselves in that we only come around once a year to ask for money. We hope that we are coming around throughout the year to engage people in the support. But in terms of our fundraising campaign, we do it every year about this time of year. People can certainly get involved by simply contributing. If your workplace offers workplace giving campaign, you can give through payroll deduction. If not, we try to give every single person in Cascade County the opportunity to give. We do a mass mailing that will go out in the middle of November. You can always go to our website to contribute. And if you want to volunteer, we talked earlier about Volunteer Great Falls, but also just call our office. And if you want to help with the campaign or any of the initiatives, we welcome the community.
Absolutely. And so I want to give you guys a chance to, can you give us a story or two for our listeners that I think it helps to, you know a person that United Way has really helped? And I know there's thousands of them, but to give folks both an idea of the magnitude, because I, you know, share the number of people you help, and then maybe a couple stories of people that have been helped that really touched your heart.
Yeah, so this year, through our grants alone, we will help more than 32,000 people in our community. And that's literally, from helping, babies who maybe have disabilities, connecting them to programs that can help them both mentally and physically, to seniors who need meals and need just somebody to check on them every day. So it's literally the whole spectrum of the community, 32,000 people, really one in three people living in our community are touched by United Way. They may not realize it, but we're touching those people. And I guess, I have the opportunity to go out and meet the people that we're helping. And I think there's so many stories, but I think, one story, especially since we were talking about homeless people, one person that really touches me is a man named Irvin. And he was a veteran, witnessed it was in Afghanistan and witnessed, really his best friend dying in front of him. And, furthermore, he took that incident and blamed himself for it. And that tumbled into depression. It tumbled into substance abuse and, eventually tumbled into homelessness. But because of the support that United Way provides for a wraparound program like the Grace Home, he was able to, find his herd, so to speak. He found other people that had experienced the same thing that he did. And he found people that he could talk to, both peers and professionals. And now I go into the community, I'm going to the gym, and I see Irvin there working out. And he's, he's living on his own. He's in a good mental place. He's in a good physical place. So to see somebody go from, really the lowest point in their life, lower than I could even imagine, to, being somebody who's successful and thriving and healthy, both mentally and physically, just what an amazing turnaround. And it wouldn't happen without people who are thinking big picture, without people, without both the grants that we provide, but also without people that want to change, those bigger picture problems.
And I think there are so many instances of, you think of that story, and there's someone obviously who is in significant pain and need, and we're able to find success. One of my favorite stories of all time. I during the campaign, I'm going into this business, and the lady who coordinates their campaign tells me that the night before, she was mentioning to her father that she was leading the United Way campaign, and he goes, "Oh well, I know they support the crisis line," and he hadn't even told his daughter this, but her mother had passed away the previous year, leaving him alone out on a farm, and he contemplated suicide. He called the crisis line, was able to work through it, get additional help, and his daughter didn't even know that until she mentioned that she was helping with the United Way campaign. And he's like, "They helped us."
That is powerful.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that is, change lives is the metric, right?
Yeah.
That I think
yeah.
we all yeah. really focus on at the end of the day. So I do, before we sign off, I want to just make sure folks know exactly how they can reach out to you. So could you just give our listeners the website address and then where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, so our website is uwccmt.org. So it stands for United Way, Cascade County, Montana.org. And of course, they can find both ways to volunteer and to give, as well as more information about our initiatives. So they can find all of that there. And they can also find us on Facebook. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. And it really, we just really encourage people to get involved. If you're passionate about being a part of a solution, give us a call. We want your passion, and we want to channel it towards something really great.
Perfect. So unfortunately, we got to sign off for the day, but I want to thank you again, for coming on the show. That was Gary Owen, and the president of United Way of Cascade County, and Kim Skornogoski, the marketing director of United Way. Thank you both so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas.